Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, Tuesday Morning Show host, and this morning I am so thrilled to be joined by two folks who know just about everything there is to know about the Lake Pendre of Idaho Club. It's a fishing club. I'm going to introduce you both. First, Barb Gillespie. Good morning, Barb.
Good morning, Julie.
And Barb's husband, Dave Gillespie. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Great to have you here. So we're going to get going with a great interview, and I think I'll ask you to start by telling the listeners just a little bit about yourselves, how you came to be in Sandpoint area, and how you got involved in this really very active fishing club. Dave, why don't you start?
Oh, I was raised in Priest River, so all I ever heard about when I was a youngster was the size of the rainbow trout in Pendre Lake, but unfortunately, my father was a stream fisherman and a fly fisherman, and it didn't quite come to fruition until later in my life when I started fishing in Lake Pendre. So,
that's a tough one to have to wriggle your way out of fly fishing and go back into big lake fishing. I bet that was a battle.
I shouldn't say fly fishing. I should have said spinner and worm fishing.
Oh,
that's,
sure.
That's what my dad did. And so,
but a different kind of fishing for sure if he was fishing the rivers.
Right, right. And dad actually was afraid of the water. So
boats
were kind of out for him and the big lake. So that
you
was,
got it. Well, good for him that he could enjoy fishing from the banks. Yeah, so you started in Priest River, and then how'd you make your way over here?
Well, we still live in Priest River, so we're part of the club, and so we do a little traveling when we come to meetings, things like that.
There you go. And for how long have you been involved?
I actually since I think 2007, I believe, and it was what we. Well, we always in the mid 1980s, Barb and I started fishing the lake a lot, and we really enjoyed it, and I lost my train. I lost my train. I thought
you got out on the lake a bunch.
We did. We really did.
Yeah, Barb, you can rescue Dave, and we won't pick on you too much.
When we moved up here, Dave and I met in Denver, Colorado.
Ah,
and there's a long story on that, but that's where I was living at the time, and that's where he had come to live for a while. And we came up here and found that I loved it up here, and I wanted us to move up here. So we bought some land, and we moved. And we brought a boat with us. We always had a boat from the first month, probably, that we were married. We had a boat and did a lot of fishing in Colorado as well. But then we moved up here and brought a boat with us. And it's been the way it's been ever since.
So. Yes. And what a great place to have a boat.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
No kidding. Well, I haven't asked you what are your positions with Lake Pendre of Idaho Club. I think you both have pretty important positions.
Yes. Yes. Right now I'm the vice president of the Lake Pendre Idaho Club.
Okay. And Barb, what is your position?
Right now I am a board of director.
Oh.
A member of the board.
Very nice.
We have both held many positions in the club. We were both presidents at different times, and I was the first woman president of the club, and the only one so far. So,
well,
I join anybody to join me in that. Any other woman out there that would like to become?
That's a great attitude. I hope some women are listening that would think about that.
Yes.
All right. So you moved from Colorado, you enjoyed fishing on the big lake, and you got involved with this organization. Well, let's move on and talk about what is Lake Pendre of Idaho Club? How do you characterize yourself? What do you do? Barb?
Well, we are, we started out, we just celebrated our 80th spring derby, K&K Derby. What they called K&K back in the day was Kamloops and Kokanee. And that's what the K&K stood for. And so the club has been around since the mid to late 40s. And it was a fishing derby primarily for a long time, I think. But we have branched out over the years and become more of a community-minded organization. And there are many things that we do as a club, as well as put on fishing derbies.
Yes. Was it just one derby originally back 80 years ago?
Probably.
Yes. Yes, it was one derby, but it was for every day that the lake was open in the year. The first two derbies or first several derbies were run by the Bonner County Sportsmen's Association and the Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce.
Interesting.
So but they were, so if the lake used to be open from April 15th to the 1st of December, so they had derbies. The derbies were an annual derby. So it was really, and it's what really made the fishery known, because, you know, something that lasts that long. And it was, you know, I think it was crazy, but they generally started around the 15th of April, you know, with the opening of the lake, and the town, this Sandpoint was 100% behind it, because, you know, the Chamber of Commerce was solidly in behind it, and they had things like, I know that if people who have visited the museum here will see the a lot of souvenirs, and some articles about the Red Hat days and all the other things that go along with the start of our derbies.
I see you're wearing a red hat.
Oh, yeah.
That's an important part of things.
Yeah.
I'd like to back up for a second. It was Kamloops and Kokanee. And is there still a Kokanee element? Now it's just Kamloops.
We had tried to reintroduce Kokanee once the Kokanee came back into the lake after the AIP Anglers Incentive Program. And we started to get an abundance of the Kokanee again. But the small Kokanee and the small rainbow look an awful lot alike. And we had people that would accidentally enter a small rainbow for the Kokanee. So we decided that rather than take a chance of depleting either one, the rainbow or the Kokanee, we wouldn't entertain that any longer.
That's right. And those big rainbow trout, they're kind of what it's all about anyway.
Right.
I would think so. All right. So I had no idea that this organization has been around as long as it has. That's amazing and continues to thrive. What would you say is the main mission of this club? Is it you'll know better than I, but what do you think its main focus is?
Well, the motto for the club is to protect and enhance Lake Ponderay.
Oh, great. That's a good motto.
And in keeping with that, it's what we try to do to better the lake, to help the fishery, and keep a healthy fishery.
That's a great explanation. What are the main activities of the club? I know there are the derbies. How many now?
We now have three derbies annually. We start with sometimes we put the K&K Derby just so people will understand it. It's a tradition, but it's just our spring derby. So it's which happens the last weekend of last full weekend of April to the following Sunday.
A week. So you got to get out there in 9 days.
Nine days of fishing.
Okay.
Everybody. Some people think it's too much, but not. There are others of us that do not. So,
Yeah, if you want to catch a big one, I could see how you'd want to get out 9 days in a row and just really dedicate yourself for that period. Yeah.
And then and then there's the members only derby. It happens the third or fourth week end of September. And then we have our another, it's a classic because we're probably getting close to 50 years of the fall derby, which is the week of Thanksgiving. So it starts the Saturday and Sunday before Thanksgiving. We skipped Thanksgiving Day, let people have their turkey at home and all that. And then the 3 days after Thanksgiving. So we have an eight day derby in November.
So. And you finished up the fall derby or the members only derby not very long ago.
Right.
Yes. Tell us about it. How did it go?
I think it went quite well. It was a really good event. It is the baby of our events.
The smallest.
This year we generally have about it, as the name implies, it's members only, and the numbers are smaller than the other two derbies, but it goes quite well, and generally there's a real close to a 25 pounder patch fish caught every year in that derby. So it's been since we started it, there's been quite a few really big, nice rainbows caught.
That's neat. Now, Barb, you wanted to mention something.
Well, I just want to mention that the Members Only Derbies, the full name of it is the Ross Milliken Members Only Derby, LPOIC Ross Milliken. And he was a former president, very well thought of, and did an awful lot for this club while he was a member. And he has since passed. Hmm. And so we decided a few years ago that we would name it in his honor. And it was created by him for the sole purpose, to begin with anyway, because the fall derby can be a very bad, hectic time weather-wise. Mm. And the lake level is low at that time, so it's harder for people to get their boats out, if at all. And so he wanted to have a time when it would be still pretty on the lake, and maybe not quite so active weather-wise, and people would still be able to enter into the lake with their boats and enjoy themselves, especially for our seniors at that time. We had a lot of people that they just couldn't quite get out there in November, and there's still a lot of people that can't make it.
Yeah,
and,
it makes sense.
It just gives them another opportunity to fish.
Yeah, and a good reason to join your club for that derby.
Right.
Now, are there prizes at every, does every derby have prize awards?
Yes. Oh. Yes, they do. We have the Rainbow Division, the Adult Rainbow Division. We have the Adult Mackinac Division. We have the Youth A and B. And that stems from 0 to 12. And then we have the junior division, which is 13 to 17. And we haven't always had the junior division. It was entered probably 10 years ago, around that time, I think. And we decided that it was to hopefully maintain a line of fishermen from small children up to adults, and that way we could keep them interested in being outdoors and fishing and enjoying themselves in that respect.
That helped us keep the youth in there the fishing, giving them something to continue doing that, so that there's we really like the family idea of and so everybody can take part.
So true. And I feel like there are so many things in life that if you don't start to figure them out as a youngster, it can be a little hard later on. So what a great idea to get those kids going and understanding how to fish in the way that you need to fish on that lake and be successful and have some fun competition with your friends that are of a similar age. I love it. Good idea, you guys. I wanted to ask you, I think this is probably a good question before we go away from the actual derbies, about what something really interesting that you're working on, which is to try and increase the catch and release aspect of this fishing derby. Let's go there.
Well, the catch and release was created 2020, I believe, that the thought came to be. And there were an awful lot of people involved in the creation of that, and we owe a great debt of gratitude to them and their thinking of how to get it set up, the processes that people that we go through to make sure that we enable the fishermen to release their fish if at all possible. We know that it's not going to take place every time.
No, and it's not 100% successful, but if that's a goal, so many more of those big fish can stay in the lake.
Right. Get back out there and reproduce, and we can keep this big fishery going. It not only helps the lake, but it helps the community. It brings in people for these derbies. It brings in people just for tourists. They want to be able to see where this big lake is that they keep hearing about.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
It's got to definitely benefit the economics of the Sandpoint area.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more of how catch and release works with a derby such as yours, because boats are all over the place. Yes.
So we have three ways. We incorporate three way stations who are manned by a single waymaster at each location. They're paid position, and we have a strict system that we use to weigh the fish, and they are trained to weigh the fish all the same way with the same procedure. So that we keep the contest part of it fair. These fish are rainbow trout. Really needs to. It's hard to keep them alive. Everybody needs a good live well, and we really work hard to keep those fish healthy so that we can release them back into the lake. We don't punish people in our derbies for not releasing the fish. A fish that dies is still allowed, and we do not. Like I said, we don't punish them for that. But we do offer a reward in all of our derbies, an incentive for the angler to release their fish.
That's the way to go, isn't it? Provides a nice incentive and keep working on education, why you want to do it, and things improve over time. It's great. Well, I'm so happy to hear that. I wasn't aware that it was that it was part of your really something you've been working on with the Lake Poundry of Idaho Club, because I remember, well, you just, like, for example, going to the captain's table and just seeing lots of pictures of fish that were caught and came in, and obviously we're never going to go back out in the water.
No.
So so this is a nice change for y'all. All right, well, we've talked about the derbies, but more happens than just derbies with your club. Let's hear about other things that you're doing during the year.
Well, in 2018, we began the scholarship program, the LPOIC scholarship program. And people donate to that year-round. We have different ways that people can donate, either on our website, which, by the way, we have a brand-new website that is just in its second year, and it's very nice, and I encourage people to go out and look at that, lpoic.org.
Okay, lpoic.org. Pretty easy.
Yeah, and so they can get on there and donate. They can donate on their memberships. If they make out the form itself, we also enable people to renew their memberships or begin their memberships online on our website. But the scholarship is we try to give out anywhere from 4 to 8 scholarships, and a year. And they are for, they have a criteria that they fill out the application for the scholarships, the students, and they're graduating students from the different schools in this area. And we've been pretty successful with it. And we have, I believe we had five last year, but the criteria is that they need to be able to tell us that they are going to continue with some sort of environmental education or fishing, biological, or something in that respect. We even we had a child 1 year say that they wanted to be to become a lawyer, but they wanted to be in the environmental aspect of it, even just for fish and game or something. But it's, you know, they
Yes, wonderful. So anything related to some an environmental,
right?
Yes,
right.
I love that.
Yeah,
and that's great. And so that continues on for you, and kids can. I suppose they just go to your website to look for that application.
Right, right. They are our future. It's the club's future. It's the lake's future. So, yeah.
Boy, that's for sure. You know, I wanted to go back a bit, kind of back to the fishing on Lake Pendere and talk about what it takes to fish on that lake, because it's a big lake and I'll be, you know, we're all looking out over the lake all the time. And sometimes you'll see somebody out in just a little tiny, like what looks like a tiniest little fishing boat with a tiny little motor. But then when the Derby's going on, you guys are pretty well equipped for major fishing. So if a person wanted to participate and hadn't done it before, what might they need to be thinking about for boat and equipment and all that? It probably takes a bit more than just basic fishing.
It kind of depends. For I'd say you probably would like to have or be in a boat that you'd feel comfortable in. Lake Pendere has some times when it feels like an ocean, and so first of all, there's a comfort value in being in a little bit larger craft. Okay, so that's one thing. We've often been out fishing in the spring or the fall derby and come across somebody fishing in a 12-foot aluminum boat. And it's really, I always have a little fear in my, you know, I'm always saying, oh my, you know, and then it,
right.
Some people are really comfortable being, you know, pushing things a little bit towards the edge. And we always look and say, gee, I wish I hadn't seen that.
Boy,
there's a lot of equipment involved. It's the same things. A lot of the things you'd use in the oceans, in the Great Lakes. We fish with planer boards and downriggers, and tow plugs straight behind the boat. But the current regulations allow while you're fishing Lake Pendere, there's no limit on fishing rods that you can fish off of the boat right now because of the angler incentive program, which rewards the fishermen for turning in lake trout.
Right. So that heads, still goes right. on in addition to the walleye and northern pike
right,
kind
right,
of stuff.
Right.
Good. So no limit on the rods. Now, I got to think this is like any hobby or sport that one takes up. It's something that you build on over time. You might just get your first boat and, you know, a bit of equipment. And then as life and time goes on, people have more and more. I'm sure that's the case with many of the members. But but I wanted to ask this question, too. Do you ever get people that go in together on a boat and, you know, share? Because it's expensive to be out on the water. And that I would think that might be a possibility for someone just getting going.
It is. There's family, you know, it's still the family thing that, like we were talking about just a little bit ago, the family part of it. I can think of I often think of our a couple of our board of directors or our brothers, and that are a big help to us in the club, and then and their father's out there fishing with them and things like that. So it's still a family affair in that respect with that family
and their kids.
Yeah, oh, so, and their kids. Yeah.
Their kids are very big in the youth, and they're growing. We're seeing them grow up, and so now some of them are even getting into the junior age. So that's what's kind of fun, is watching these generations, not only three and four different generations doing it, but then watching the kids grow up to become adults eventually.
Yes, so, and maybe take over some of those boats and equipment and all that.
Yes.
Now, I have to... Oh, go ahead, Dave.
So I kind of got off the subject, but a lot of the boats take on a look of a porcupine out there nowadays. There can be five or six lines on a planer board line. There can be there's two, three poles on a downrigger. So we do carry on. Generally, I think people look at look at those boats going by and say, "Gee, they must know what they're doing." That's just an opinion, I think, from them.
Boy, I bet the captain's got to know how to steer that boat and keep all those lines from having problems.
We are a football field wide. That stuff.
I bet. Yeah, I can imagine that's rather challenging. Well, a lot of fish, I assume, are being caught. You must keep some fish and eat them sometimes, or not really now?
We don't keep a lot, but I have a lot of friends that like fish, and I do fish for the Mackinac in the lake also. It's always good to make a little gas money while you're out there. So we do that, and it helps pay the.
And that's the reward you get for getting those fish out of the lake.
Right.
Yes.
Right. It's really kind of a sad thing that one species is targeted like that. But it still helps to afford some of all the equipment that you need to have be out there.
Right, and the goal is to keep the fishing populations more balanced with what we want for more native or the species that have been decided should be the species in the lake. Now, another question that I have is, do you keep track of the number of fish that are caught on each year in the Derby? Is it hundreds, thousands? How many?
Actually, it's not as many as you would think. Especially in the Rainbow, especially now that we have the catch and release. Prior to that, then there would be an awful lot of Rainbow entered. But now people are more aware of the release part of it and try to keep the minimum of fish that are
just
actually
hang
caught.
Onto their big ones, right?
Hang onto the Mackinac. However, we have 10 places in all of our derbies for the Mackinac division. And we encourage multiple Mackinac entries, and they all try and bump each other off. And it's quite the contest, but it's a good time.
And we also, with the rainbow trout, have a minimum length requirement for adult entries.
Oh, good.
And we use peer pressure also to get people to release the fish, but a rainbow in the adult division has to be 32 inches long.
So that's a big fish.
Yes, it is. Most of the time that fish approaches probably 14 pounds, and then we let everybody know immediately. We're in constant contact with our waymasters through text. We use cell phone text system so that we can keep an eye on what's going on. We announce over the VHF radio.
The biggest fish caught.
And always announce the length of those fish, so we give the anglers an idea of the length of the fish they need
to be competitive in the competition.
Right.
So that allows them to just say, okay, I can let this one go right now and not have to come in and save even more fish.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. That's smart, guys. Okay, now I'm going to turn the tides on you a little bit because you've been fishing for so long, and I'd like to hear a little bit about your history fishing on the lake, and I have to assume you've been in the competitions, the derbies, for a lot of years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yes. So how many? Have you been doing them every year since you got involved?
Yeah, since before we were involved with the club. We started fishing the derbies actually first.
Yeah.
And thought that the more we were out there fishing, the better we would do. But the lake sometimes throws you curves. You know, just about the time you really think you've got it down, it's something different. But anyway.
But you stay with it.
That's why they call it fishing and not catching.
But you get out. You must get out and see what's working. You must do some fishing before the derbies.
Oh, it's terrible that I have to do that so much.
Do you both go, Barb? Do you get out early, or do you let Dave do that?
I used to go quite a bit, not so much in the last few years, but I enjoy fishing. I have always enjoyed fishing. I grew up fishing with my father back in Illinois, catfish. Mm. So fish has always been a part of my life, and that's one thing that brought us together was the fact that we both like to fish and hunt and like the outdoors. But yeah, it's something that David has been fortunate to enter and maintain in the standings several times. I've done it a few times, not as often, and I haven't caught as big a fish as his. But we wouldn't have what we've got if he weren't out there doing the experimenting and finding out where the fish are and what to use and especially the right time of year to use it and everything. So I owe it all to my guide.
Oh, way to go. It's a challenging mental. It's a very much a mental challenge to get really good and do the right thing with this to any type of fishing. But I would think particularly with the big, big rainbow trout fishing. And, you know, I've missed one important topic of something that it's not an event and it's not an ongoing activity, but it's something really neat that you guys are working on, and that's a cleanup project. Barb, what do you know about that?
Well, we have had two. We didn't have anything this year, but the 23 and 24, we had two events. They were one day, and we had scuba divers and the Kootenai County Sheriff's Department and Marine Department were all involved, and we cleaned up an area at the in the Bayview Marina and at the ramp there at that area, and we got upwards of thousands of pounds of trash, garbage, tires, cans, barrels, you name it. We got it.
How do you think it all got in there? From the houseboats? Just people dumping?
Or the winds.
Oh, sure.
Pick things up. And I mean, mm-hmm. We had signs, you know, big metal signs that have been there for years. And things like that happened. It's not just all carelessness, but some of it is. And we just all need to take a little more concern and time to make sure that our stuff is planted so that it's not going to blow away or not fall off of the boat or whatever. But then what's coming up is really exciting. And we are out searching for grants, and we've received several now. And I believe we've pretty much gotten 2026 taken care of as far as the costs. We're getting real close to having that done. And we're looking at a 3 to 4 year process of days, not just one day earth, but it's going to be like 4 to 5 days at a time that this is going to take place with professional divers and one thing and another. And a lot of donations have come in.
Yeah.
And
all in the Bayview, Bayview
right,
Marine.
Right now.
Bayview is the first target that we have. I'm hoping that we can, after we make a dent down there, that we can expand it to Ellisport Bay and here in Sandpoint. Maybe we can make a difference.
Garfield
and sure, Garf, and especially yeah. Garf and Garfield also. Anything that people pack out on a dock or take out in the boat to the extent that it's on the boat and the weather gets bad, because everybody knows it's not always sunshiny and bright here.
No, we have, things fly right, off. Right, things right, can fly out of boats, right. For sure.
So that's what our plan is. This plan also involves renting a barge and a captain to run a winch, because there's not just small things in the water down there. There's tires. if you think about it, it's there.
Well, listeners, these two have offered me a copy of their newsletter, which I'm enjoying, and there's a great pretty extensive article about the cleanup project, and there's some photos of what's going on underwater that I think would be worth your while to check out. So can they find this online, or do they need to join and you'll mail it, or how do people access this article in your newsletter?
Our newsletter is at, we have it on the a link to that, to the our newsletter on our website, lpoic.org.
Okay.
And I believe they can download it right off of the website. It's 32 pages long now. It's been 32 pages for quite some time.
Yeah, and it's good. It's really pretty. The printed version is beautiful.
And so you'll find out what's going on with the cleanup. There's also lots of pictures of big fish. There's lots of pictures of children holding fish, and some of those children are holding some pretty big fish.
That's what's more fun than a little kid with a big fish.
There you go.
That big smile.
And the smile.
That's right. That's cool. Well, I always try to ask this question during an interview if it makes sense, and I think it might in your case. All these years fishing, you must have some great stories of either funny things that have happened or crazy. Is there anything you'd like to share that might sort of highlight how great it is to be with your organization? A good story to.
Oh, wow. There are many. We have different instances where people have told us their stories, and we have experienced it too, of eagles coming down and thinking that our lures might possibly be a kokanee, and they come down and swoop it up, and sometimes they get hooked.
Oh, boy.
And people have had to bring them in and hopefully get them out without hurting themselves or the birds.
That's an exciting experience.
Yes. We've watched we've watched osprey do the breaststroke to the shore holding, because they've gotten into the water after, say, a pretty good-sized rainbow, which would, you know,
it's, yeah.
12, 15 inches, and maybe it's too heavy for them to...
They don't want to let it go either.
Right. They can't.
They can't let it go.
They have to be on pretty much solid ground for their claws to open up again.
Oh,
so
really?
We have sat and watched and kind of guarded osprey before swimming into shore. And it's fun. It's scary.
Yes.
But it's also exciting too.
Yes. What an experience. That's pretty cool.
We've seen moose attempting to cross in different areas of the lake. The goats over on...
Bernard mm-hmm. Peak. Yes. What a great thing to be able to see.
Right. And they come down to the water, you know, especially when the water's low, they get down on the beaches and stuff. We've seen deer that have just had their... we saw a doe one time that had just had her fawns right there on the beach.
Oh,
and it's never ending. You see elk up on the hillsides, and
it's a great lake to be able to experience the way you've done it. Now, I have to ask you this, though. We know there are a lot of big things underwater because you've got pictures of them. Any Loch Ness, any Serpent of the Lake photos, any sightings?
sometimes I see something that's an illusion. No, I can't say we've seen the Loch Ness Monster or you
Nettie,
know
our, whatever she's called.
They used to have some of the big rainbows named. They were so hard I can't even think of the name now.
Oh, but there were some ones so big and distinctive that they named them.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a neat story. And
I'm sure those that are listening to this will be able to tell you exactly what their names are.
That's right.
We can't.
And then we were hanging out around Bayview working on that cleanup project. And do you run into any subs, or is that not something you ever see?
The Navy is sometimes can be an obstacle in the way of fishing. You know, you go out down there and you're planning on a day of fishing in a certain area, and sometimes we get moved a little bit. They come on the radio and they ask us to take our fishing to another area.
Sure, and because you've got lines way the heck down there.
Yeah, right.
Well, they don't want the interference from the boat. They're doing work with the
sonar.
I see.
So yes. The boats being in the water might cause interference in what they're doing. So we generally there's real everybody complies with that, and if they it's just for them to get the word out so that then people to move off the way out of the way a little bit. But it very rarely happens. Most of their testing goes if they're a weekend fisherman. I don't think it hardly ever happens. It's generally during the week.
That makes sense. Yeah, everyone's got to respect each other and everything will work out.
I happen to think of something that you had touched on earlier of different things that the club does. We help Fish and Game a lot in different respects. There's the Sullivan Springs cleanup every August that we get involved with Avista, as well as Fish and Game, and it's up over by Granite Creek.
Ah,
okay, and it involves cleaning out the springs for the kokanee habitat,
and that's one of just a couple of spawning creeks for the kokanee, right? Trestle Creek, and then over there on the shore. That one's on the shore. Yes.
Well, it's up
shore and a creek.
Go ahead, right. David. You've done it.
Tell me. I'm not sure.
Well, we actually go out there in conjunction with the Idaho Fish and Game and their representative. There's most of the projects that the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement entails. It's something that the Fish and Game and Avista works on together, and then the club is also one of the 17 entities that is part of this Clark Fork settlement. So,
you were, and so was Trout Unlimited of Panhandle,
right. Yes,
and I didn't know you guys were
correct.
Too. Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yes. So
stakeholders.
We become the manpower sometimes, but in that cleanup. So that's and gladly the one thing that always makes me smile is that if I say in a meeting that we've got this cleanup coming up, then the hands come up and we generally get a good showing, you know. Mm-hmm. and get people out there to help out. And sometimes people that don't even come to meetings or it's just they hear that something's going on. It's surprising how people will help out.
You have to all zip over in your boats, or is that how it works?
Yeah, that's for that cleanup. We have a boat. We generally have somebody coming from the Hope area, somebody coming out of Garfield, and somebody and a couple boats sometimes coming out of Bayview.
How fun! What a fun way to spend a day.
And we always goat them into buying lunch.
Yeah, they bring them very nice sandwiches that are made.
Yep.
Well, good for them. Yeah. That's nice. Well, as we come to an end of this really interesting interview, I'm just wondering, have I missed anything? Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Well, there are many more things that the club is involved with, but we can save that for another time if you'd like.
Okay, if you don't want to, we've got some time if you want to go ahead and mention a few more.
Well, one thing that's coming up is with our fall derby that's going to be happening here, starting the 22nd of November, the Fish and Game always put out a logbook, and for our derby as well as the derby that's going on now for the LPOAC, and it's just to give them information of how many fish and what kind of fish and the size of the fish that are being caught at this particular time of the year, this season. And also another thing that Dave and I have always been involved with, and others within the LPOIC, is in the spring, we have a time that the Fish and Game invite us to help them collect fish. We have a certain limit of fish length that they would like to have, and they take them and... go ahead, Dave.
Okay, so we catch, they're generally looking for 18 to 26 inch rainbows, and they get a number of transmitters that they actually insert into the fish so that they can so they can follow them. It's the coolest project that I've ever been a part of. And we actually go out and run all of our gear out there and catch an 18 inch rainbow and call them on the cell phone or on a VHF radio, and they run over and we keep the fish alive and alive well after we catch it. Mm-hmm. The Fish and Game pulls up alongside, gets ahead of us, and lets back a big cooler.
Wow.
And we exchange the fish with them. We give them the fish, and they do a little surgery on the fish, keep an eye on it for a while, and then they release it back into the lake.
Microchip.
The value of these fish is yet to have, I mean, we've seen some of the examples. These transmitters put out a signal every 3 seconds.
Wow.
So they can follow these fish around the lake. The one thing that we have always felt that gets overlooked is our favorite thing, the rainbow trout in Ponderay Lake. They do surveys and they do studies, have done them since I've known about Ponderay Lake and our big rainbows. But they never really, I don't think they got the attention, you know, that it's...
They haven't been studied like some other
fish, right.
And they're pretty unique.
Yes. Right. And they are in, it's a great population. It's, you know, there's only two populations, very viable populations of these Girard strain rainbow trout anywhere.
And one's Canada, one's here.
Well, and actually, Canada's having some problems up there. Mm. But they've also tried to get a population in Coconusa Lake Montana.
Yes.
So there's actually three places where they're found, but the population, the fish at Coconusa don't achieve the sizes mm-hmm. that they do in Kootenai Lake and Ponderay Lake.
Interesting. Now you've got me wanting to ask a few more questions. And so I'm trying to understand if there's a difference or if it's the same fish. Are Kamloops the same as the Girard rainbows?
The Girard rainbow they came from, or their origin is the Girard in Kootenai Lake, Girard.
Okay.
I believe it's a town or
okay
some kind of a
yes place. Yeah. Now the second question is, Do our fish in the lake reproduce, or are they sterile? The rainbows in Lake Ponderay.
It's a viable population that has reproduction.
Oh, good.
Every spring in late February and March, they're seen in the tributaries that surround
Lake.
They go up the Clark Fork River. Mm-hmm. They go up the Pack River, and that's about the
extent
and the fly fishermen from the banks get their chance at catching one and
can
releasing
it. Can you imagine
it.
One of those big rainbows
on a fly rod
running up the Pack River? Oh my goodness, that's a fishing. But, and maybe Deep Creek or not? I can't remember. No, they don't go up Deep Creek.
It's basically the Clark Fork River and the Clark Fork. The Clark Fork and the Pack River.
There you go. Yeah. Well, yes, boy, the Pack River's not that big. If you saw one of those big guys in there, you'd be pretty amazed. Yeah, you'd need more than your 5 weight that you're using to catch the little guys in there. How interesting. All right. Well, that's very interesting. And you know what you're giving back then to the studies of these trout is really impressive.
Right.
It's interesting. We saw a presentation. We saw a presentation last spring. It just blew my mind of the what they had just received like a day before this meeting that we took part in. And they were showing the pings from these fish along the lake, all up and down the lake in different seasons and the different fall, spring, that type of the difference where these fish are and where they... It blew my mind. Just wonderful.
Right. They're not just hanging around their fishy little neighborhood. They're going places.
Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. They're predator fish, so they're always on the hunt for something to eat.
That's right. So. Well, I said it once, but now I really mean it. We are kind of coming to the end of our time, so I'm going to thank you both for your time here. And I can just see it in your faces and hear it in your voices that you enjoy the resource, the lake, and taking care of the fish and making it a family event. It's just been great to talk to you and learn about this club. So if a person's wanting to know more or somehow get into the sport, if they aren't, they should just go to your website, I'm assuming. And maybe a meeting? Do you have an occasional meeting that they could attend?
We have our meetings. Our general meetings are the second Wednesday of every month at the Waterlife Discovery Center on Lakeshore Drive in Sagal. And they start at 6 o'clock. And anybody and everybody is welcome. You don't have to be a member. Okay. You may become one, you know, if you choose. But... just come and meet us and let us meet you, and we'll get to know you, and maybe we'll be a good fit.
That sounds great. Well, I want to wish you the best of luck on the Thanksgiving Derby, and it sounds like you had a good time on the one that's already come and gone. So best wishes to you all, and I'm going to conclude our interview with a thank you to you, Barb Gillespie, and Dave Gillespie, board members and vice president of the Lake Ponderay of Idaho Club. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.